Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, this week we're going to talk about the mechanics and the process of trying to publish a book.
Have you ever wondered how to get a book published? We'll talk with Donna Hill, an author, musician, and advocate for the blind. She's written a book whose protagonist is a blind teenage girl, and she describes the process of writing and publishing the book. And at the end of the show, we'll talk about some of the mechanics involved and some useful support networks that she's found. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Donna Hill.
I really feel that I would have been much better off if I had learned Braille early, and it's something that I care deeply about and that I try to encourage people to get over whatever the things that are keeping them from allowing their children to learn Braille.
You know, and I guess it's just like learning a language. It's a lot easier to learn these things when you're young. So if you suspect that you have some vision problems, or you might have some vision problems later in life because of some complications when you're young, that's a good time to pick up some of these skills when your mind is a little bit more flexible.
And we've had many, many guests on this show talking about how the ability to read Braille correlates so strongly with people having more success in their career paths. And so there's lots of reasons to want to learn Braille if you expect that your vision is going to get to a point where you can't use regular print.
Well, I'm glad I learned Braille when I was young, even though I didn't start using it until I got to graduate school.
Well, you're just a great example of that.
And although access with speech and other technologies is really pretty good these days, it just gives you another tool to accomplish some of the tasks that you'll need to accomplish in life.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Donna Hill. Can you start by introducing yourself?
My name is Donna Hill. I go by Donna W. Hill, and I live in the Endless Mountains region of Pennsylvania, in northeast Pennsylvania. I'm a semi-retired singer-songwriter and recording artist and a writer. I've been writing articles on all kinds of topics, everything from knitting and chocolate to special education and blindness issues. I, for the past 4 years, have been doing media relations for different groups inside the NFB as a volunteer, Performing Arts Division, the Writers Division, the NFB of Pennsylvania. And that's kind of what I do. I send out press releases. I try to get on radio shows. I try to get interesting blind people to have articles about them in their home newspapers, things like that.
Can you describe your visual impairment?
I was born legally blind from retinitis pigmentosa. I had some usable vision. The legal blindness part of the whole thing was the fact that I had extremely limited field of vision. And I always used to like to say that I was legally blind according to the federal government, but at the time Pennsylvania didn't recognize field loss, and so I was illegally blind as far as the state was concerned. But as I got older, of course, with retinitis pigmentosa, the vision did deteriorate, and I lost all of my reading vision, oddly enough and ironically enough, between graduating from high school and starting college. The left eye just was really the only thing I could use to read, and it just went over the summer. So it was in college where I started to have readers and talking books, which were at that time, some of them were on those great big reel-to-reel tapes that we used to have, and of course the talking books themselves were on the LPs that went at 16 RPM at the time. I should have learned Braille when I was a child, because I spent an awful lot of time straining and struggling, and I dealt with a lot of headaches and neck and back problems and stuff like that, that I really feel that I would have been much better off if I had learned Braille early. And it's something that I care deeply about and that I try to encourage people to get over whatever the things that are that are keeping them from allowing their children to learn Braille. I know people have told me that you can't teach the kid Braille. I mean, you're going to make them look blind. And it's like, hello, the kid's blind. He's already legally blind. You know, what do you mean make him look blind? I taught myself Braille after I got out of college. I am not good at it. However, it has been an absolute lifesaver to me over the years. It allowed me to live independently, even though at the time, before Rich and I got married, I couldn't read my own stuff. I mean, it just cramped up my hands, and I just could write it better than I could read it.
We talk to a lot of people who speak about the importance of learning Braille while you're young. It has to be much more difficult learning when you're older.
Well, it is for almost anything.
So since you missed the opportunity to learn some of these skills, such as Braille, when you were young, what do you do for navigating around town? Do you use a cane, a dog?
My guide dog is Hunter, and he's a black Labrador retriever from the Guide Dog Foundation for the Blind in Smithtown. He's my fourth guide dog, and he will be 10 years old in March.
Wow, so he must be approaching retirement age.
He is not approaching retirement age. I have to back up a little here and say that I had my first guide dog till he was a little over 13. We retired my second guide dog when he was 14 and a half years old. I did not get another dog until he passed away. So I'm used to long-lived guide dogs, although my third one died when he was 9 and a half, and it was very sudden and very traumatic. So although Hunter may feel as though he ought to be retired, he's not getting off that easy because he has a very, very easy job up here. When I lived in the city in Philadelphia and surrounding areas, my guide dogs knew over 100 places by voice command, and I was taking trains all over the greater Delaware Valley and the Lehigh Valley, doing all my normal, you know, go to the post office, go to the bank, do your shopping, go to the drugstore. Well, now we're in the country, so poor old Hunter has the duty of walking me around a very quiet rural neighborhood through the trails and around the pond and down the dirt roads. And he rarely even has to deal with a car coming by. So I think as long as he's in good health, he will keep working. And he's happy to do so, especially when he gets to come with us to restaurants and shopping and be with his daddy, because that's always the best thing for him. So I think we got a little time left with him.
That sounds like the ideal job for a dog.
So just to let you know, about a year ago in show number 1209, we interviewed somebody who raises guide dog puppies about everything that's involved in training and raising guide dogs, and that was fascinating if you want to go back and listen to that one.
That was a fun interview.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is how to write and publish a book with special attention to factors that might be impacted by a visual impairment.
So you talked a bit about your artistry in music and you talked about journalism. It sounds like you're a multifaceted artist, and I understand you're in the process of writing a book that has a protagonist who is going blind. Can you talk a little about that?
Yes, I have been working on a novel called The Heart of Apple Butter Hill, and I've been working on it since the 90s. I didn't have time to actually sit down and write at the time, but I would take notes on cassette tape. And when I finally got to the point where I had some time and I realized I can't keep writing this thing on cassette with a couple of things in Braille and here and there, I have to learn to be able to use a computer, and that's why I went away to learn to use one.
Now, where did you learn? You say you went away to learn the computer?
I went to the Bureau for the Visually Impaired in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, which is the state organization, and I told them what I was doing and what I wanted to do, and they sent me to a place in York, Pennsylvania, where I lived in a hotel, and then I would go to this Schanzenbach Consulting for the day, and I was there for 4 weeks. And they would teach me how to use a computer and how to use JAWS. And I mean, I knew nothing about it whatsoever, you know, so it was all new to me.
That can be difficult if you're not used to computers, and then all of a sudden you have to learn about how to use accessibility tools with a computer.
But getting back to the novel is done, and I use the word done loosely because it seems like whenever you reread something, you want to change a comma or use a different word or something. So until it actually goes to the publisher, I guess it isn't really done. But as far as I'm concerned, if I died tomorrow and someone got to read what I have as my final version, that would be fine with me. We are working on hopefully getting it published this spring. Matter of fact, I have a preface that was written for the novel, written for educators by a woman named Dr. Karen Squire. And Dr. Karen Squire works at the Lighthouse in Chicago, and she's an optometrist.
So we record these interviews months in advance, and by the time this show is airing, the book should be out any minute. So if you're interested in finding it, look for it, and if it's not out yet, wait a couple weeks and look again, and she'll tell you where to find it.
What gave you the idea for the story?
The book is about a 14-year-old girl and a friend of hers who's also 14, and their classmates and teachers and stuff. So it is a school adventure story, but it also has excursions into fantasy. And things just come to me, so I can't tell you exactly how I got the idea, but I wanted to do something to show what goes on with the kids who have degenerative eye conditions and are basically trying to pass as sighted for a good deal of their schooling, and then get to the point where either they or their parents decide, or they move to another school and the teacher suggests that, you know, they start learning non-visual skills. And our girl, her name is Abigail, and she has a guide dog she got when she was 14, which is a little bit younger than the youngest people that I know who have gotten guide dogs who were 15 at the time. But it's a book, so I took literary license with that. And his name is Curly Connor, and he is actually, my second guide dog was Curly Connor, and the dog in this book is very much him in terms of his personality and stuff. And anyway, the kids, one thing I know about children when they're reading books, and this really is written for middle school and older readers.
So do you envision this being a series?
I would like it to be, and I have done some writing and some even more thinking about the next one in the series. But I'm going to have to do so much in the way of promoting it because I have to promote it myself. We're self-publishing. I did try to get an agent, but one thing I was told by a couple of blind writers is that female blind people in novels, if they're shown as being independent and resourceful, that is not what the industry wants. They want them to be needing to be taken care of, to be rescued, something like that. They consider, one woman told me that she had actually years ago gotten one back that said, you know, that her portrayal of this blind person, this blind woman, was unrealistic. And it was like, hello, I'm writing about myself. How could it be unrealistic? So I know that's not what the industry isn't looking for this book, but I feel that it's time for blind girls and women to have someone in fiction. I mean, when I talk to people about blindness issues, one thing I like to do, if I can get a group talking to me, is I ask them to name some famous blind people. And they inevitably come up with Stevie Wonder and Ray Charles and Jose Feliciano, and more recently they know about David Paterson, who used to be governor of New York.
You can sense my age. I was thinking of Helen Keller.
If I ask them specifically, what about blind women? They do say Helen Keller. And I have to tell them, do you know that Helen Keller died over 50 years ago? Why is it that we can't name another blind woman?
Well, it'd be really nice if you can make some inroads with this type of book.
Well, my inspiration for that whole thought process is something like Uncle Tom's Cabin. I mean, we know that was fiction. We also know that that had an enormous impact on the way people saw slavery and what was going on in the South. I mean, it was fiction in the service of social justice. And I would like to have this book be that for blind people.
So as difficult and as much work it is writing a book, I've always had the impression that, and I guess you've touched upon this, that it's very difficult to get a book published. Can you talk a little bit about that struggle and how you go about trying to do that?
Sure. There are several things that have changed in the publishing industry just in the last couple decades with our digital revolution. First of all, it is possible for people to do things that they could never do before in terms of self-publishing, print on demand. You don't have to buy 1,000 copies of your book. You get the thing set up when somebody orders it, the company prints it out, and there they go. On the other hand, the publishing industry itself is having changes in itself because of the fact that people don't want to buy books. They want their books in an electronic form. So you're seeing bookstores going under and such. And the way it has affected new writers is this. Publishers are not looking for unpublished authors. And if you're an unpublished author, if you want to get noticed by a mid-level or large publisher, you have to have a literary agent who will basically be your middleman between you and the publishing industry. This is a person who theoretically has developed contacts within the publishing industry and is respected for the kinds of material that they present to publishers, and so they're more likely to look at a book that an agent that they respect offers them than they would be if you as an unknown, unpublished writer would try to get it to them. So you have to find an agent.
So have you tried the agent route?
I have. I did it for a little while because I wanted to be able to say that I had tried it, you know, sort of like walking through fire, contacting these people. And of course, they all want something different. So I did it for a while, and then I felt like I was really wasting my time. I'm not getting any younger. I'm going to be 63 next month. And I figured, let's just go with it and see.
So I take it you went the self-publishing route. How does one self-publish?
Well, Amazon has a service called CreateSpace. I think it's actually a separate company, but it's an Amazon company. I don't know how that works legally, but basically you pay them and you upload your book to them. You have to get it in the format that they want, and they get it ready for publication. And they put it on Amazon's website. It gets the exposure that books on Amazon get. And there are some other things, depending on what package you can get with them. They'll send out press releases for you. They'll do your cover art for you. There's a lot of different things that they offer in terms of what they can do. We haven't chosen a package yet. My feeling is that I need to get as much support and free publication recommendations, reviews, sponsorships as I can get, because this is a project that is flying in the face of a lot of well-reasoned thoughts on the publishing industry. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not something that you would, that they would think that's not going to work.
So once you sign up with something like that, it's essentially a print-on-demand. If someone wants the book, they print up a copy and send it off. Is that the way it works?
That is correct. And you can opt to buy. They give you bulk rates if you want to, because you want to take them around. If you're going to go to colleges or bookstores or libraries or whatever, you might want to take a bunch with you. And you're going to want to hand some out as free copies to certain people who you think might be able to help you. My feeling is what I want to do is I want to get this included as supplemental reading on both a secondary school level and in college.
In addition to this book, Donna has also written a number of articles, and these are largely in online magazines. So if you want to read some of her shorter works, those are all published at suite101.com/Donna-W-Hill. But they changed the interface for posting new items to that site, so she hasn't been able to post anything to that site since the middle of 2012. And that's another one of her pet peeves, is accessibility in journalism. But she's managed to find some other places to publish her journal items.
In light of all your problems with the accessibility of the Suite 101 site, have you found another accessible site where you can post your articles?
There are sites that I was using a few years ago that are still accessible. Go Articles is one, Azine Articles. But I have to stress that these are not sites that you have to be some kind of an expert writer to write for. They don't pay. And some of them don't even let you post any pictures, which I always thought sighted people like pictures. I like a site that gives me the option of putting up a photo for somebody. And, of course, my husband's a photographer, so we always have something that we'd like to post for that.
Well, and it certainly appeals to more people that way, as you say, having the visuals.
Right.
Get a wider audience.
There are other sites I'm looking into. One of the most popular online magazines in terms of their ratings and readership is called Squidoo. And I signed up for them, and I haven't quite figured out how to post an article with them yet. But I'm more optimistic about that than I am about Suite 101 fixing their problems. The accessibility issue is such a big thing in my life at this moment because it's not just Suite 101, it's WordPress, where I want to have my book be on WordPress in terms of having that be my site. You can go to WordPress instead of having a blog. You can make it look like a website where you have a static front page and then you go to different pages for other things. And you can buy a domain name, and it's pretty cheap. I'm doing this, but I'm having to fight tooth and nail to try to get beyond the fact that their instructions seem to end with a graphic. It's like they give you 8 steps. This is how you post a photo, for instance. And they give you 8 steps, and the last one will say, then you'll see a bunch of choices, and your frame should look like this. And then there's a graphic.
You know, I think we heard exactly this same story from Lori Motis, and she hosts theblindpost.com.
Uh-huh.
You should go to theblindpost.com, and I believe she actually has a segment in there talking about, you know, how to put up a web page. At least go back and listen to the episode of Viewpoints. That was show number 1207, back when Eyes on Success was still called Viewpoints, and the entire high-tech segment at the end was all about hosting a website. The Blind Post. It's almost like a little bit of a Craigslist for people with visual impairments, so you'll find, you know, used Braille displays and things on there. But she also has some informative articles and other stuff in there. It's an interesting resource. But she also went through this whole thing about, well, how am I going to put up my own website?
Well, my favorite one at the moment is the picture thing. Put your cursor on the point of the page where you want the picture, and then click the media button. How do you do both of those things with JAWS unless you have a hotkey?
It is difficult.
Yeah, exactly.
Now for this week's high-tech item. Resources to help a writer with everything from actually writing to all the mechanics involved in creating and publishing a book. So it sounds like you've had to learn a whole lot of stuff that had nothing to do with actually writing the book. Are there other blind authors available for you to network with? How would you find them? I would imagine learning from each other might accelerate this process.
There are people who can be quite helpful. There is a writer's division of the National Federation of the Blind, and I am a member of that. We have a email list which you can join for free, and you don't have to be a member of the organization. It's really open to writers. It's kind of an online writer's workshop. We talk about everything, whether it's how the publishing industry works, whether it's talking about words themselves, posting something you wrote for criticism. It just runs the gamut of all those kinds of things. And within that group, there are people who have had more or less experience than others who have some things to impart. We have a teleconference once a month, and our president, Robert Leslie Newman, tries to get other writers, sometimes blind writers, sometimes sighted writers, sometimes people from the publishing world itself to come on and talk to us about the industry and the process, and, you know, whether it's the creative process or the marketing process or dealing with print on demand, you know, the different choices that you have for that. So you're right, there's an awful lot to learn, and I think I'm not alone in saying that I'd rather not be dealing with that stuff, but unfortunately that is the reality, and it's stuff we do talk about, and it has to be dealt with. You have to know about it.
The website for the NFB Writers Division is www.nfb-writers-division.org, and we'll have not only that link in the show notes, but also the email address of the head of the division and the link for how you get onto their mailing list.
So Donna, how do you go about choosing a publisher for your book?
Well, there's a lot of these things. Oh, you know, you're a writer, want to get your book published? You know, we'll publish your book, you know, and you find out, just send us $500. No, don't send them $500. They're going to publish your book. They're going to publish your book. These people are sharks that are out there, and they might actually even send you a book, but they aren't going to do anything with it. They have no standing in the industry. They're just trying to get your money, and it isn't worth it. You're much better off, especially nowadays, when you have the option of publishing with Lulu or CreateSpace or some of these others, that you don't need that.
So I guess the message is beware.
And what should you really expect the publisher to do for you?
If you get a publisher, you will still, at this point in time, have to do the promoting. You set up your readings. You set up your visits to libraries. You make sure you get on radio shows that talk about books. There was a day when the publisher did that for you. They would set things up and give you your schedule and say, you're off, you know, there you go.
That's interesting. I thought that was the whole job of the publisher.
No. What they do for you is they pay up front the initial cost of having the book published. And they take the book published and put it in certain locations to sell it. You know, bookstores and online. So they will set that stuff up for you. And do not minimize that. I mean, that's a lot that they're doing. But it is not the sum total of what they used to do before the digital age.
So if you want to connect with Donna, she's got a new website that's really quite pretty and also accessible at www.donnawhill.com. And from there, you can find her on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, etc. So there's lots of ways to reach her. And as you can tell, she's very friendly and eager to share some of this knowledge she's acquired in the process of writing the book. But if you missed any of these links, they'll all be in the show notes, which you can find at our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. That's it for show number 1315. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking with Jonathan Mosen from Freedom Scientific about what's new and exciting in JAWS 14.
JAWS 14 introduced some pretty cool features like flexible web, and the text analyzer has been improved, the vocalizer speech has been dramatically improved, and you'll want to hear about that.
If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook at Eyes on Success and on Twitter at _EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.